Welcome to Secure America with me, Frank Gaffney, the program that's a kind of owner's manual for protecting the country we love against all enemies, foreign and domestic, to God's glory and that of his kingdom. This is going to be a very special hour. I am so pleased you're here for all of it, I hope. It will feature one of the men I've come to regard as not only a brilliant expert on the mortal enemy that we face, and that would be the Chinese Communist Party, but a man whose acumen on what it is up to, how it operates, the effects that it is having already as a result of its unrestricted warfare against us, let alone what it has, I fear, in prospect for us, namely a kinetic war as well. His name is Stephen Mosier. He has had the experience of being one of the first, indeed, I believe the first social scientist from the West who was allowed into communist China decades ago. He studied it closely. He came away horrified by what he saw there, and in particular, what the Chinese were doing in the name of population control, namely the one-child policy, to their people and to countless millions of unborn children. He has written extensively on these subjects, most recently in a marvelous new book entitled The Devil and the Communist Party. It's about the history, the sorry, the disgusting, the shocking, and the very frightening history of the Chinese Communist Party from Mao down to Xi. Stephen Mosier is also the founder and president of the Population Research Institute, a member of our Committee on the Present Danger China, and a very, very admired colleague. We're delighted to have him with us always. Stephen Mosier, thank you especially for giving us an hour of your time. We couldn't be more pleased. Welcome back.
Well, I'm happy to be here with you, Frank, and I applaud all of the good work that you do.
Thank you. Let's talk a little bit about the work that the Chinese Communist Party is doing. You have, I think, properly cast most of it as, truly demonic in the spiritual warfare we're engaged in, a theme of this important new book, The Devil and the Chinese Communist Party. One facet of this is the murder. Now, every year, it seems, of something on the order of 100,000 Americans. And I'm not even talking about the pandemic. We'll get to that. But just year upon year, through what I think is properly described as chemical warfare, fentanyl is being used to destroy a generation of Americans, maybe several. Steve, there's a new report out from the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party on this very subject. I'd like to get your thoughts on it, and more broadly, what are we confronting here, and how is it they're getting away with this?
Well, I chose the title of the book, The Devil and Communist China, quite deliberately, because I think that the contrast between China and the United States in terms of our respective foundings, it couldn't be sharper, couldn't be more clearer. We were founded on the notion of loving God and loving our neighbor. I mean, that's the basis of the Judeo-Christian religion. You shall love God as you, you shall place God above all things and love your neighbors yourself. Communism in China was founded on hate, quite consciously. And hate is ultimately demonic. It's founded on hatred of God and hatred of one's fellow man. And you say, well, communists don't hate their fellow men. Well, yes, they do. they kill them in huge numbers. And if that's not an expression of hate, I don't know what is. Mao, for his part, exulted in the destructive power that this hate unleashed. He said, communism is not love. Communism is a hammer that we use to crush the enemy. Now, make no mistake, Frank, we are the enemy. And they are using communism as a hammer to crush us. And they're using other tools as well, including fentanyl. Now, there would not be a fentanyl crisis in the United States were it not for China, period. And they could stop the production of fentanyl overnight if they wanted to. The Chinese Communist Party could. They know exactly what factories in their own country are producing the fentanyl precursors. They know exactly where those shipments are going. mostly to the northern cartels, Mexican cartels, some now in Canada as well. And they know exactly how much money is being made off killing Americans because they're laundering the money that's generated by the drug trade. It's laundered through Chinese-controlled banks. So they control the beginning and the end of the process. Mexican cartels would be out of business without support from Big Brother China, without question. They don't want to cut off the fentanyl trade. They continue to say, in fact, the Global Times, which is their propaganda mouthpiece, as you know, just said this morning that the fentanyl crisis is a problem of drug use among young people in America and lack of domestic controls on its sale and distribution. So they don't accept any responsibility for something that they're causing. And yeah, I call it chemical warfare. I also call it the third opium war, because you remember, no one remembers because we weren't alive then, but we all have read about the first opium war from 1840 to 1842, followed up by the second opium war in 1860, which resulted in China being humiliated in a way that it had not been humiliated for centuries. You know, the Chinese emperor had always thought that he was the ruler over Tian Shao, over the entire earth. And all of a sudden, he was humiliated by these barbarians who arrived with their in their ships with cannons that overmatched anything he had, and really forced the opium trade on China. China, we had nothing in the West. England had nothing that the Chinese wanted to buy. And so they decided to import opium from India, and the Chinese began buying it in large amounts. China, the emperor, tried to stop the trade. The British defeated them in battle, and the trade continued. Now, we weren't directly involved
on
in
this
that,
point, Steve, if I may. Yes, I just want to come to this point. They're waging the third opium war against a non-party to the first two, namely.
Exactly.
Principally, is that right?
Exactly. That was the point I was coming to. This was a conflict between Great Britain and the United States. And quite frankly, Frank, if Great Britain and China. Between Great Britain and China. And quite frankly, if the United States had not intervened in the 1860s, China would have been divided into colonies. It was through our efforts that China remained an intact country until the end of the Qing dynasty with the Xinhai Revolution in 1911, 1912. And then it was divided into provinces run by competing warlords and so forth. But the United States has played a positive role in China, all of which is distorted, written out of Chinese history altogether, because we are the enemy. And so nothing good can be said about us. And our young people can be killed. And they delight. Quite frankly, I have no doubt that the Chinese Communist Party leaders, who killed off hundreds of millions of their own people in various political campaigns and the one-child policy, delight in the idea that they're eliminating 100,000 enemies every year by this chemical warfare.
Yeah, and getting away with it. You know, Steve, one of the things I value so much about our conversations is we started this book, the indictment prosecuting the Chinese Communist Party and friends for crimes against America, China, and the world, with the China piece, what you just described, this carnage on an unprecedented scale. And it's not, as I recall, you've come up with the number of about 100 million Chinese who perished at the hands of the CCP, plus what they've claimed, what they've even boasted about, another 400 million or so that they killed in the womb. We have to take a break, Steve. When we come back, I want to just visit with you about that monstrous crime and what they're trying now to do to us. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute.
Congressman Steny Hoyer warned this week that in light of Qatar's enabling of Hamas intransigence in Gaza ceasefire negotiations, quote, the United States must reevaluate its relationship, unquote, with that Middle Eastern nation. The Qatari Prime Minister peevishly responded that his country is undertaking a comprehensive evaluation of its mediating role. While these statements smack of political theater, they should be seized to end Washington's practice of overlooking Qatar's myriad malign activities in the interest of maintaining a huge military presence in that nation. In fact, the Qataris relentlessly support Sharia supremacism worldwide, promote jihad via their news outlet Al Jazeera, and underwrite subversive influence operations here. Recently, they even blocked the use of our airbase there. Qatar is not our friend, let alone a reliable major non-NATO ally. Stop pretending otherwise and treat it accordingly. This is Frank Affney.
Welcome back. We are visiting for this full hour, I'm thrilled to say, with Stephen Mosier, a member of our Committee on the Present Danger China, one of the great experts on the Chinese Communist Party and what it is about. And we are visiting with him specifically about both what it has done to its own people on a genocidal scale unprecedented in human history, and what it is now in the process of doing to us. And again, we're not yet to the COVID-19 biological warfare. We're talking about chemical warfare, the subject of an important new report out of the House Select Committee on the Chinese Communist Party, talking about the use of fentanyl as a form of warfare. And Steve, I wanted to just make sure we're clear about this. You couldn't have been more categorical about the Chinese Communist Party's complicity in the fentanyl warfare against us. I think they call it in drug warfare in the committee's report. What I'm not so clear about is why anybody continues to have any illusions, and as far as I can tell, the Biden administration does, that the Chinese are interested in restricting all of this, and are willing to work with us to that end. This has been the subject of any number of phone calls and face-to-face meetings between Xi Jinping, the dictator of China, and Joe Biden. What's going on there? Why is it not clear to them what you've just said to us? Is the Chinese Communist Party's direct involvement in and massive benefit from what's being done here in the way of drug warfare?
Well, I mean, look, the Chinese Communist Party's position with regard to the ongoing warfare that it's waging against the United States is quite simple. I mean, it's tan, 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 da, 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 which means talk, talk, talk while we fight, fight, fight. They will talk a subject to death. They will smile and nod across the, you know, green covered table. They will sit in meetings until everyone else is ready to leave. But you cannot jawbone the Chinese into changing their policy. The only thing they understand is force and the threat of force. Things like tariffs, for example, would be effective in changing China's behavior. Well, we've talked to them about fentanyl, but that's not the only subject. I mean, we've jawboned them cyber attacks. The cyber attacks continue, despite the fact that Xi Jinping stood in the Rose Garden with Obama back in 2016 and pledged never again to engage in cyber attacks. It's all just a charade. We just had toothless Janet Yellen in Beijing for 5 days. She went over to do what? To tell China to stop engaging in mercantilism, to stop dumping products overseas at sometimes below the cost of manufacturing them. The Chinese just smile and nod. And they continue, the Chinese communists smile and nod. They continue to do the same thing. We've been saying the same thing for 3 decades, and their policies have not changed. The only thing that has had an effect are tariffs.
Yeah, I do want to come to this, Steve, because it's so striking. Janet Yellen, as you say, was sitting at the green table when she wasn't kowtowing. and holding forth. I don't think she used the term dumping. I haven't heard this administration use it. It's an overproduction, I think, is what they keep referring to. And yet that's exactly what it is. And it's being done purposefully, of course, to destroy our green energy industries, such as they are, and our steel industry and the like. So I just wondered, what do you think? Did Janet Yellen know that Joe Biden was going to triple the tariffs on Chinese steel being dumped in our country? Was that something she was blindsided about because it fit the political need of the administration at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, look, not to be too snarky, but I'm not even sure that Joe Biden knew before he read the speech that he was going to triple the tariffs on steel imports from China. Obviously, he's not making these kinds of decisions. The political types in the White House, a half dozen people who are close to him, are making those kinds of decisions. So I'm not sure Janet Yellen was in that particular loop. I mean, she's connected. She comes to D.C. from Wall Street. She wants trade to continue. She wants to make sure that China does not continue to shut Tesla and Apple out of its domestic market, which we see happening in real time right now as their market share declines. So eventually we're going to decouple. The best way to decouple, of course, is to do it strategically. The best way to do it is to actually, not only encourage companies to leave China, but help them, I believe, with tax deductions for engaging in relocating their factories other places, back in the United States, Canada, Mexico, India, anywhere but China, quite
right. Frankly. Now, Steve, they've coined a phrase for this, or a term, I guess, de-risking. They're not, the Biden administration doesn't seem to be really interested in decoupling or disengaging, but what do they mean by de-risking as you see it? And is that actually a thing? Is it having any practical effect?
So de-risking, as far as I can figure out, and it is a vague amorphous phrase, which is very useful to political types, suggests that we're going to make sure that we protect our defense industrial base and not source components that we need to make missiles, tanks, and planes from China. We're going to de-risk in key areas, but we're not going to upset the overall trade relationship with China. It is the overall trade relationship with China that is the problem, because China engages in mercantilism while beggar thy neighbor policy, while loudly proclaiming that we're doing that. China, dumps, well, you mentioned that the word dumping, that's exactly what you're doing. If you're overproducing a product and you're getting rid of it at below market prices, that's what we have called dumping for decades and what we can still call dumping.
Not actually, Steve, as you know, not just below market prices, but below the cost of production as well in many cases. For the purposes of devouring, basically, your neighbor's industrial base, not simply beggaring it, right?
Yeah. So the steel tariffs, I think, are a kind of one-off. The steel tariffs are intended to ensure that the labor unions do not start abandoning the Biden campaign en masse. I think it's only political.
Yeah. And it was announced as he was in Pittsburgh, as I recall, to speak to the steelworkers. So it does smack of just the most rank cynicism and hypocrisy. But is that de-risking, or is there something else that we're missing in all of this?
Well, I don't know what else there would be if you're continuing to allow goods from China, including fentanyl, to come into our country unhindered, basically. If you're not increasing the tariff rate, which should be increased across the board to 10% or more, if you're not taking real actions to protect American intellectual property, I don't know what else de-risking can be other than some sort of muddled middle ground to suggest that we're doing something without really taking actions that will make China angry. Because so many people are obviously beholden to China in various ways in the Biden administration. And I think looking forward to the years after 2025, when they will need another source of income.
Let me just ask you about this, Steve, because it's really kind of a leitmotif of the work that we do on all of this with our Committee on the Present Danger China, with this webinar series, the book that came out of it, this book, The Indictment. You can find it at theindictment.com. But more to the point, you can find so much of what we do on all of this at the Center for Security Policy's website, centerforsecuritypolicy.org. And I strongly encourage you to take advantage of the resources that are there, including these conversations that we do here at Securing America with our friend Steve Mosier, and consider helping support that work if you would. I beg your pardon. We'll be right back with Steve Mosier. We're caught up in the conversation and we have to take a break. We'll be right back.
Night after night in cities across the country, black-garbed assailants clash with police in the streets, smash windows, and throw Molotov cocktails in an effort to destroy police stations, federal courthouses, and local businesses, all in the name of anti-fascism. Most Americans are now, sadly, all too aware of the movement known as Antifa. But where did they come from? What do they want? And how do we stop their campaign of violent mayhem? The Center for Security Policy Press is proud to present Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat. This new book looks at the history, ideology, organization, finances, and strategy of Antifa and provides an in-depth analysis for law enforcement officers, policymakers, and the general public. From street fighting tactics of the Black Bloc to fundraising by prominent left-wing foundations, Unmasking Antifa is the go-to guide to understand this elusive and dangerous threat. Get your copy of Unmasking Antifa, Five Perspectives on a Growing Threat at Amazon.com.
We're back, folks, with Stephen Mosier, the founder and president of an incredibly important organization, the Population Resource Institute. He is a resource in many respects, but particularly with respect to his, I think unsurpassed, intimate, firsthand knowledge of the enemy we face today, the Chinese Communist Party. And you have to forgive me, I was so transfixed by your comments about the people inside the Biden administration who are beholden, I think is the term you used, Steve, to the Chinese Communist Party, that I wanted to capture that thought and drill down on it urgently, because I think whether it's Joe Biden himself, a man who Sam Faddis has described as a, quote, controlled asset of the Chinese Communist Party, or Tony Blinken or Jake Sullivan or the Interior Secretary, the Treasury Secretary, and so many Labor Secretary, so many others, are people who are frankly not simply beholden, but they seem to fit the profile of what the Chinese themselves call captured elites. Talk about this practice of the Chinese and how it's not exclusively been a characteristic of this particular administration, but is especially so.
Well, the Chinese Communist Party brags that it has three means to capture elites. The means are quite familiar to people, anyone engaged in any kind of spycraft. They are money, honeypots, and drugs. And, you know, in the most effective means for many people is money. And the Chinese leaders like to brag that if one bag of money isn't enough for Western politicians, we give them two or three. Drugs, sometimes necessary, honeypots occasionally work well as well. And in some cases, all three are deployed. And if you have someone like Hunter Biden go to China and negotiate deals worth billions of dollars on the basis of bringing nothing to the table except his name and his father's connections, you have to know that he's staying in a hotel room with probably 10 cameras strategically located everywhere in the room, that he's being plied with different forms of seduction of the three kinds that we mentioned. It would only take one such episode to make the Biden family into a kind of controlled asset of the Chinese Communist Party. And I'm afraid that there have been more than one episode in more than one country around the world.
Including at the hands very explicitly, as we now know, of Chinese intelligence.
Yeah.
And with Joe Biden himself, not just his hapless son or his brother, for that matter, or it seems most members of his family in one way or another. Just talk about what that means as a practical matter, that the president of the United States is part of this captured elite or family of controlled assets.
Well, it means the United States is no longer a country able to react in the interest of Americans in the event of Chinese aggression in the South China Sea or Chinese aggression vis-a-vis Taiwan, that we are handicapped and hamstrung by the fact that our leader is compromised. And I do think in the months leading up to November, when clearly the Chinese Communist Party has a favorite in the coming election, I think they clearly favor the re-election of Joe Biden. They've actually said openly in the propaganda, publication called the Global Times, that they don't like President Trump because he's unpredictable. And oftentimes, of course, you have to turn the meaning of what they say on itself in order to understand what's actually being said. When they say he's unpredictable, they actually mean he's all too predictable, because he said he's going to get tough on China. He said he's going to impose 10% tariffs across the board. He said he has a 4-year plan to decouple from China. He said all of these things would make it clear that his re-election would not be in China's interest. And so they're cheerleading for Joe Biden. And I think that the leash that they will give Biden a slightly longer leash in the months going up to the election. They'll allow him to put tariffs on steel, for example, without revealing anything about his past dealings with China. They will allow him to say certain things. They will allow him to make public statements criticizing China. But that's only because they're interested, once again, in interfering with the November election and ensuring that their let's call him what he is, the Manchurian candidate, is put back in office.
Yeah, the Manchurian president, some might say. Just to wind the clock back a little bit here, if what you've said is true, and I am certain it is, what are the chances that, we talked about chemical warfare, that the biological warfare that they engaged in with the COVID-19 virus, to be fair, with help from Tony Fauci and, EcoHealth Alliance and Ralph Barrick and the like, was in part about taking out that all too predictable president who was giving them problems and ensuring that he did not win the election of 2020.
Well, let's make a one point clear at the very beginning, and that is that that China has released not one, but four deadly viruses on the world, not just COVID-19 in late 2019 and early 2020. Back in 1957 and 1958, there was an Asian flu that began in the province of Guizhou in the interior of China. It was a true zoonosis. It was a virus that came from an animal to humans and then spread throughout China. The Communist Party did not tell the World Health Organization. It did not tell any foreign agency, any foreign government. Let it spread to Singapore, Hong Kong, and throughout the world, killed, a million people.
Now, let me just ask you, if I may, because this is an important data point, obviously. When you say unleashed, do you mean that in that case, as in this one, that once it emerged, zoonotically, I guess is the word for it, they actively assisted in its dissemination?
I think they actively decided not to tell the world because if China was going to experience an epidemic that would hamstring its economy and kill some of its people, it was going to take the rest of the world with it. The same thing happened.
Well, that sounds familiar.
In 67 and 68 with the Hong Kong flu, which didn't come from Hong Kong. It came from China, another zoonosis that was allowed to spread around the world by the fact the Chinese Communist Party deliberately hid the dangerous new virus from the world until it had spread outside its borders. The same thing happened in 2002 and 2003 with SARS-1, which killed, by the way, 11% of the people it infected. So this would have been much more deadly than COVID, which had a mortality rate on the order of a serious seasonal flu, well under 1%. Why did we find out about SARS-1 before it killed billions of people? Because of Canadian intelligence intercepts of Chinese traffic. And the Canadians brought it to our attention. We challenged China and they admitted, finally, yes, we have this dangerous new virus on the loose. We were able to contain it. Let me
just say, Stephen Mosher is deeply knowledgeable about this subject, as so many others, as reflected by his extraordinarily important book on this very subject, The Politically Incorrect Guide to Pandemics. So you have gone to school on all of this, Steve. And I know when we've talked about this in the past in connection with the COVID virus in particular, you were unhesitatingly, categorically saying very early on, this fits the profile. And maybe it's just that it got out inadvertently, but they were not going to be saddled with the consequences of it alone. But they certainly also, I think you would agree, went to some lengths to make sure that it was actively disseminated as well, did they not?
Absolutely. They deliberately spread around the world, and they mobilized in Italy, which was one of the first epicenters of the pandemic. They mobilized their youth groups and their China associations to help spread the virus. I don't know if you recall the well-known pictures, now disappeared from the internet, oddly, of Chinese young people saying, "Hug me, I'm not a virus." That was organized by the local Chinese Youth Association in Italy. And young people can carry the virus and not have any symptoms at all. But the elderly people they were hugging by the hundreds, I'm afraid many of them came down with it. I say that because that's very un-Chinese behavior. You don't go around hugging people in China. You don't even shake hands. That's a Western innovation in China. You say politely from a distance of 3 or 4 feet away, you say your greetings. So this physical intimacy that they were suddenly engaging in was very uncharacteristically Chinese behavior. I say that as a cultural anthropologist who lived in Chinese-speaking areas for 10 years. This just jumped out at me as one mechanism by which you would spread a highly contagious airborne respiratory virus. And look at the consequences to Italy.
Steve, they were devastating, of course. We have to take another break. I want to return to this incredibly important point because Chinese biological warfare is not entirely, alas, in the rearview mirror. We're going to talk about preparations that it seems the Chinese have made to wage it even more aggressively here inside the United States. Stephen Mosher is our guest. He is the author most recently of The Devil and the Chinese Communists. We're going to be getting into how diabolical they are on the other side of this break. Stay tuned.
This is Frank Affney with the Secure Freedom Minute. Congressman Steny Hoyer warned this week that in light of Qatar's enabling of Hamas intransigence in Gaza ceasefire negotiations, quote, the United States must reevaluate its relationship, unquote, with that Middle Eastern nation. The Qatari Prime Minister peevishly responded that his country is undertaking a comprehensive evaluation of its mediating role. While these statements smack of political theater, they should be seized to end Washington's practice of overlooking Qatar's myriad malign activities in the interest of maintaining a huge military presence in that nation. In fact, the Qataris relentlessly support Sharia supremacism worldwide, promote jihad via their news outlet Al Jazeera, and underwrite subversive influence operations here. Recently, they even blocked the use of our airbase there. Qatar is not our friend, let alone a reliable major non-NATO ally. Stop pretending otherwise and treat it accordingly. This is Frank Affney.
We're back. Fortunately, we are continuing to converse with our friend Stephen Mosher, the author most recently, and I've gotten the name wrong, so let me correct it, The Devil and Communist China, from Mao down to Xi. We're going to visit a little bit more about this issue of biological warfare with Steve Mosher. It's tremendously concerning, Steve. We talked earlier in the program about this House Select Committee that has until now been, I think, rather well managed and run by Representative Mike Gallagher. He has alas decided to leave Congress for greener pastures, it seems. But there was an earlier investigation that his team conducted into this facility that was providentially discovered in a warehouse in a part of California that I understand is familiar to you. Tell us about Reedley, California's biowarfare laboratory, owned and operated by, it appears, the Chinese Communist Party.
Well, I grew up on my grandfather's cotton farm, which is about 20 minutes from the now infamous warehouse, where a Chinese Communist agent who was receiving regular transfusions of money from China had set up a biological laboratory in what appeared to be an abandoned warehouse, which was only found by a local health inspector who realized that there were water lines and power lines going into a building that was supposed to be abandoned. He couldn't get, the Reedley government officials couldn't get the attention of the FBI for some reason. It was only because the local Democrat congressman called up the CDC, they finally sent out people to investigate. And then a strange...
And it took, as I understand, it took like 4 months for the FBI and CDC to bestir themselves on this.
Months and months and months for them to arrive on the scene, found all sorts of pathogens and dead mice, humanized mice, by the way. The humanized mice means mice that have been biologically adapted to resemble humans in their reaction to respiratory viruses. It's a way that you would create a new coronavirus by using humanized mice, just to make it clear in people's minds.
And then, also to disseminate it, perhaps?
And then why would you have such a biolab in the heart of the United States if you didn't have some nefarious purpose? So then at the end of the day, instead of doing very detailed analyses of what was in the lab, all of the material was suddenly ordered destroyed. Isn't yes. that convenient?
Curious.
And
destruction
so we don't
of
know,
evidence.
No, precisely. You know, we know that there were very, very dangerous pathogens in the lab. We have the names of some of them, but we didn't do the kind of detailed analysis we need to do in order to find out exactly what they were doing, how far along they'd gotten in their research, and so forth.
One aspect of this, Steve, that's a personally jaw smacking is, that there was a freezer that, as a man who has mastered Mandarin, you would have recognized the word Ebola on it.
Yes.
But when the CDC discovered that none of the packages inside that freezer had any labeling on it, they, as I understand it, told the local authorities that they weren't going to investigate further, sample, test, or otherwise figure out what were in those packets. No, is that right?
No, there was no further investigation done. All of the biological material was ordered destroyed. So they destroyed the evidence of Chinese communist biolab activity in the warehouse. Now, what worries me, of course, is there may be another warehouse somewhere, or maybe a dozen or two dozen, who knows how many warehouses in different parts of the country doing the same thing that haven't attracted notice of even the local authorities yet. And certainly the FBI is so busy that it has no time.
Evidently. So, Steve, that is the, I think, single most chilling aspect of all of this for me, is we have the distinct prospect, and the committee's report said as much. They were concerned about this. There's been such indifference to the whole issue that it doesn't seem as though anybody's actually looking for any of it. But people who might be coming in to marry up with the contents of one or more of these other facilities seem to be large numbers of Chinese fighting-aged, unaccompanied men. And, you know, we talked about in Italy, you know, people hugging to spread this disease, presumably upon the orders of the CCP. What if those were, I'll say, special operations elements and were trained in more efficient dissemination techniques? Should we be concerned about that, do you think?
Well, absolutely we should be concerned. I don't think there's any doubt that the sudden flow of Chinese illegal aliens into the United States is an accident. I think the spigot has been turned on by the Chinese Communist Party. People need to realize that you cannot get a passport in China unless you're politically reliable. You cannot get an exit visa, even if you have a passport, unless you've passed another test, a political test. And so the people coming over have been able to leave China with permission of the Chinese government, number one. Number two, when they get to Panama or whatever their initial destination is, they're able to go on the internet and access funding from accounts in China. They're also able to access instructions from accounts in China as to where and when to cross the border successfully. Those accounts, Frank, would not be allowed to be open if the Chinese Communist Party were not complicit in this flow of illegal immigrants. They would simply be shut down. How can you access an account? The Chinese Communist Party knows perfectly well who these people are. They could close down the accounts in an instant. They don't. Instead, the people cross the border, they abandon their IDs, and then they can go to the Chinese consulate or embassy, as the case may be, and get new identification papers. That has gone up on their websites as well. So clearly, that flow has two purposes. The larger flow, I think, are economic migrants. But just as during the Chinese Civil War, Mao Zedong said that guerrillas move among the population as fish swim into the sea, this is an effort to create a sea of recent migrants, all of whom are more or less controlled assets of the Chinese Communist Party, in which real agents, spies, saboteurs, and terrorists can move undetected and be protected until the moment that they engage in action.
Steve, we have to take a final break. We'll be right back with more with Steve Mosher, connecting some more dots, including how the entity that is supposed to help us manage any kind of problems of a biological warfare kind is actually working for the CCP as well. Stay tuned. We'll be right back. We're back, and Stephen Mosher is with us. We're talking about insights he has, well, obtained over decades of work on the Chinese Communist Party threat. Few have done more to warn us of it and are clearer-eyed about the full magnitude of it. And Steve, I so appreciate what you've been saying. You kind of connected the dots of how the Chinese Communist Party knows exactly what it's doing with, you know, these biolabs and with these agents who could perhaps disseminate their contents being insinuated into our country, just as they know about fentanyl. And by the way, I neglected to mention earlier that we are having one of our Committee on the Present Danger China weekly webinars tomorrow as we speak, Friday at 11:30 a.m. Eastern Time. Very much encourage you to go to presentdangerchina.org and register for all of those webinars, if you will. But particularly this one, Stephen Mosher is going to be one of our experts who will be commenting on the weaponization of chemical agents like fentanyl to destroy vast numbers of Americans and what we better be doing about it. And Steve, I speaking of doing something about it, as you know, one of the pieces of the unrestricted warfare in which the Chinese Communist Party has engaged against us has been in the pursuit of dominance inside international organizations. In fact, I've just come from a press conference we did today about the World Health Organization. And one of the men that I was with was Congressman Chris Smith. He's just had a hearing, I think in the past week or so, on the Chinese influence in outfits like the UN and its assorted subsidiaries like the World Health Organization. You've studied how they staff these operations. Talk a little bit about that, and then we'll talk about the advisability of having the World Health Organization in their control under these circumstances.
Well, people need to know that the leader of the Chinese Communist Party, Xi Jinping, recently quoted Mao Zedong, the longtime chairman of the Chinese Communist Party, saying that the Chinese Communist Party had three magic weapons. They were propaganda, United Front work, and the People's Liberation Army. United Front Department is a huge department in the Chinese Communist Party, and its purpose is to infiltrate organizations. It worked very effectively during the Chinese Civil War to hollow out the nationalist government of Chiang Kai-shek and played a great role in defeating the nationalists in the Civil War. They are hollowing out, using United Front tactics, our own democracy here in the United States, Western democracies, and they penetrated, infiltrated, and are seeking to control from the inside international organizations like the World Health Organization. So this is a massive effort. It is organized. It is controlled by the United Front Department of the Chinese Communist Party, which spends over $10 billion a year in these efforts. And it has been successful at using programs like the United Nations has a junior executives program where different countries can send in junior staffers to learn how different agencies work. Well, we haven't done that in a systematic way in the United States, but China has. They have planted as many people at junior levels in these agencies as possible. And of course, they always lobby for the appointment of at least one senior staff, if not the head of the organization, to be someone who is compromised by, beholden to, otherwise works for China. That describes Dr. Tedros Ghebreyesus, Marxist from Ethiopia. He's clearly a Chinese puppet. He was proposed and supported by China. And all of his actions in the COVID pandemic in the early days when he covered up for China and literally indirectly helped China spread coronavirus around the world, I think stem back to the fact that he too is a controlled asset of the Chinese Communist Party.
Yeah. So, Stephen, one of the things about Tedros Ghebreyesus, of course, was, as you said, his advice, as we call it, during the COVID pandemic, tracked almost perfectly with the preferences of the Chinese Communist Party. Lies he told us about the origins, lies he told us about transmissibility, lies he told us about the effectiveness of the China model as the best way to respond to this pandemic. Incredibly, and this was the subject of our press conference today with Senator Ron Johnson and Congressman Ralph Norman, Bob Good, Chris Smith, and many others, was that the idea that the Chinese, among others, to be fair, the World Economic Forum, the European Union, Bill Gates, Big Pharma have come up with, including, of course, the Biden administration, is to actually give this guy more power, to give him the ability to actually command things, not simply advise about what is a public health emergency of international concern and what needs to be done about it. I understand that you have mounted a campaign in advertisements and social media to raise awareness about what's going on here and to enlist popular support for, well, at a minimum, hopefully, preventing these two treaties that are now in the works from being finalized and approved by the World Health Assembly in just about 40 days. Tell us a little bit about what's going on with that campaign, if you would.
Well, we produced a petition, which we sent out to our supporters around the country. And then we made from that a short reel, which is a 2-minute video, telling about the dangers of giving power to unelected bureaucrats who are actually working for the Chinese Communist Party and probably do not have America's best interests at heart or be primarily even concerned about public health at all, rather than political advantage for them and their sponsors. And we put it up on Google. We started getting a lot of signatures. We've gotten hundreds of thousands of signatures now. And at that point, Google decided that it was time to blur out the reel, the video that we put up, and put a misinformation label on it. So now you can still click through to the actual video, but you have to read, you're sent immediately to a page which tells you that this reel is all misinformation. Tedros is actually a good guy, and the World Health Organization only has our best interests at heart. And if we don't listen to them, we're all going to die, that sort of thing.
Fascinating, Steve. I'm afraid we have to interrupt this conversation because we've run out of time, but not out of topics. But what is so striking about this is part and parcel of these treaties is that you, as member nations, once subjected to them, must establish censorship mechanisms that will enable the efficient suppression of information in just the way you're talking about. Stephen Mosher, you are one great American. I'm so glad you're on our side. Thank you for this hour. It has flown by. We want you to come back very soon, if you would. Congratulations again on the devil and communist China.
Thank you.
Godspeed, my friend. Keep it up. Come back, as I say, very soon. I hope the rest of you do the same next time. Until then, go forth and multiply.